Hey there, and welcome back to Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Daniel McFadden, and joining me again after a week away to talk NASCAR and the Coke 600 is Jared Haas. How are things in Charlotte, Jared?
Drizzly.
Drizzly, that's a good way to describe it.
Rain was the big factor of the weekend, and the annoying part was, it was, especially during Sunday, didn't show up on the radar at all, but it was definitely drizzly, just not even really hard rain. Just enough rain and humidity to make the weekend long where they couldn't dry the track.
The worst rain delays are the ones where there's nothing on the radar and you're sitting there not racing.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the worst. But we have so much we could talk about this week, Jared. We could continue to talk about the rain. We could talk about, you know, Ryan Blaney snapping a 59 race winless streak. We could talk about Bubba Wallace and Eric Almirola's mid-race, you know, shoving match kind of argument thing, whatever you want to call it. Or we could talk about the big news of the week.
Man, we got a lot to talk about. We got an action-packed show, to say the least. You even forgot to mention, we have an interview as well, too.
We do.
We won't spoil that yet, but we'll bring that in. But obviously, the big news.
The interview's with Curtis Francois, the owner of Worldwide Technology Raceway. But anyway, before we can even get to that, I think we should start with Chase Elliott.
Yes.
NASCAR's most popular driver. I believe he had his stretch of consecutive NASCAR starts snapped at three? How many races even back?
Yeah, I mean, the Chase Elliott came back from injury like a couple weeks. And during the race, coming off of turn four, he and Hamlin, you know, they got loose. Elliott made contact with the wall, and Elliott basically turned in left into Hamlin, and it didn't pass the eyeball test. I think that's the one stipulation.
It was a hard left.
Oh, it was a hard left. I'll say that much. Like I said, there was still, you can tell it a little bit less, but Denny Hamlin, you know, they looked at the data, and Chase Elliott definitely turned left, even though the car was fine, right into Denny Hamlin. And I mean, I applaud NASCAR for the consistency.
Yes.
And it seems like now
I didn't have any faith that NASCAR would actually go through with suspending their most popular driver for one race. Had no faith that they would do it, but they did. They announced it yesterday that Chase Elliott, driver number 9, won't be present at this weekend's race at Worldwide Technology Raceway. So how surprised were you that they, if at all, that they suspended him?
Surprised, not surprised. You know, I'm like, okay, this is something big, but I'm not like, this is something earth-shattering where, the president was set with Bubba Wallace. I think if the Bubba Wallace didn't happen, I think they'd be less likely to incline to suspend him with that type of stuff. But, I mean, they've already done with this for right-rearing people at a big track. Hamlin, during his podcast, was holding his head because, you know, he was feeling it in his neck.
Well, I didn't see it until today, but I saw the in-car camera of when the accident happened, and his head just gets boom, 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 like really quick. It was a violent wreck.
Yeah. And that's the big concern right there of wrecking people is the reality of the situation. Folks, this is a dangerous sport.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically the right rear end somebody's throwing a fastball at somebody's head at 98 miles per hour. You don't do that type of stuff because it's dangerous.
Yeah.
And that's why Hamlin's very upset with Chase Elliott, rightfully so. He basically took a 98 mile per hour fastball to the head. Yeah. And, you know, that's not the type of sport we need to build ourselves on.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to hear your thoughts with Chase Elliott. Do you think a suspension would have been more in line with the for Elliott too? But also, he's within the, you know, trying to get in the playoff hunt. Do you think points would have been more of a appropriate penalty?
Oh, no. You have to do what you did with Bubba Wallace last year. You absolutely have to. So the suspension for one race, I'm okay with it. Now, I might be writing my column about this at frontstretch.com tomorrow. Do you think Chase Elliott should be given a waiver from NASCAR after missing this race?
Well, they gave a waiver to Josh Williams when he got suspended for the one race for parking it on the front stretch. But, I mean, he's already got a waiver once. They're going to give it to him again.
But should they? Like, I don't think they should. I don't think you intentionally wrecking someone like he did Hamlin, you should get a waiver for that.
I feel like this waiver process is just they give them out like candy.
They give them out like candy.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's basically you miss one race, here it is, here's the candy, here you're eligible on that. I mean, I don't see where else, where would they not accept a waiver, I think is the point. And I think the interesting point is you brought it up of like intentional wrecking of them with this waiver. They've already set where, you know, they're going to give a waiver for being suspended for a week to contend, you know, to be in the playoffs. But I feel like this playoff waiver type of stuff is just, you know, if you miss a race, you miss a race. Big whoop-de-doo.
And it was six races. That was Chase Elliott's consecutive cup starts made before the suspension. So, oh well. But, so I just did not have it on my bingo card at the start of this year that Chase Elliott will be suspended for a race.
There was four different drivers piloted the number nine car. You had Josh Berry, you have Jordan Taylor, and now this week you have Mr. Corey LaJoie.
Yes, Corey LaJoie, who is the son of two-time Xfinity Series champion Randy LaJoie, and his full-time job is driving the number seven Chevrolet for Spire Motorsports. Yes, he was tabbed to take over Chase Elliott's seat this weekend, and just arguably this the biggest opportunity of his career. This is a driver who has pretty much driven in backmark equipment his entire cup career, Xfinity career, whatever. He hasn't won a NASCAR, or technically he hasn't won anything since like 2013 in like ARCA.
In like ARCA stuff, yeah. I mean, he was semi-competitive with ARCA, and I think he, you know, he kind of had the same fate of Ryan Truex. He just never really had anything to come up to for fruition. Alex Bowman kind of had the same career path, but he took off differently with Hendrick Motorsports. But how often do you get to say, here's a race weekend, I get to pilot a Hendrick Motorsports car at a racetrack for a race, not just, you know, just a test, an actual race. So Corey LaJoie, as Bubba Wallace made the joke, he's now stacking quarters in this situation instead of his podcast was stacking pennies. So I mean, he's, I think Corey LaJoie's excited for this effect. And, I mean, this could be, you know, a career-changing type of race.
Well, this is kind of the fruition of, I don't know if you remember, a few years ago when the 48 car, that seat was open, Corey famously, like, gave, like, a handwritten letter to Rick Hendrick, kind of, like, making his case for why he should be considered for that car. Didn't get picked. That one, you know, went to Alex Bowman. But here we are now a few years later, and I think probably that, who knows, maybe that letter ultimately kind of led to this happening.
I think that too, and then also the top of it too, the Xfinity Series, Josh Berry, who was the main driver before then, is in Portland this weekend. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's contending for the championship, so it's not really, you know, travel's going to be really hard between Portland and St. Louis, so they decided to go someone that's already in St. Louis. Yeah. Corey LaJoie's in there. And then the second driver, well, who's going to be driving the number seven car that Corey LaJoie usually drives?
That will be Carson Hocevar. He's a full-time truck series driver for Nice Motorsports. So, and he's only made like two Xfinity starts. And here he is making his cup debut this Sunday at Worldwide Technology Raceway.
I think Carson Hocevar and Spire Motorsports is an interesting concept on this, because you have Spire Motorsports, they're starting to expand, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, sometime in the future that Carson Hocevar is the driver for Spire Motorsports in the Xfinity Series full time. I think that's the next step for Carson Hocevar, considering the fact how consistent he was for the 77 team. But I mean, he's got his growing pains, but I think if he can take this opportunity and grow well, I think this is going to be a good turning point for his career as well, because he's been in the news a little bit. He had Martinsville, where it was a little bit of a hiccup, where he ironically right-reared someone at a short track, and then even last year with Colby Howard at IRP. So I think Carson Hocevar, this gives him a bigger stage to prove that he can be a contender, even in the Cup Series.
You're right, yeah. And I'd forgotten about that IRP thing. That was incredibly egregious last year. But anyway, Jared, let's move on to the actual race that happened on Monday, the Coca-Cola 600. Got Jared, Charlotte Motor Speedway, it's back.
Welcome to the next-gen car. I mean, this, you know, it's like some tracks, it's like hit or miss.
It was
a
phenomenal race.
Yeah.
Won by Ryan Blaney. It was, I mean, except for a brief, you know, stretch there, I think towards the end of the third stage when
he led 163 laps in this race. And I think this is somewhere with, like I said, the next-gen car. Remember we were talking North Wilkesboro? I mean, it was great to be back. We actually didn't record this because I wasn't there. But I think you could feel, you could probably agree with this statement that at North Wilkesboro, the race needed to be back. The track needed to be back. The track was great. It was just the next-gen car was not performing well at that track. I think that's where a lot of people were let down. It wasn't the track, it was the car. Because this car seems to perform well at these mile and a half tracks. What are the two tracks that we think probably the best races so far?
Kansas and Charlotte.
And I mean,
for a decade, Charlotte was like, oh, great. We're going to Charlotte, this weekend. Cool. We're a long way from 2016 when Martin Truex Jr. led 392 of 400 laps.
Yeah, one of the most dominant performances you could ever see. Yeah, and then to remind people of this, the track goes through changes because it's a day-to-night race.
Mm-hmm.
And he still led that many laps. He kept, you know, his car was so good that he was able to keep it. And, to be fair, Ryan Blaney did lead a lot of laps, but, I mean, there were comers and goers throughout the race.
And there was 31 lead changes in this race.
You know, actually, the surprising thing, like Stuart Haas Racing, especially at the start, terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I made a tweet about this. I think it was Harvick, Eric Almirola, and Chase Briscoe. Of those three drivers, they lost a combined 41 spots at one point from the start of the race and, like, during stage one. They were terrible. And, like, they were all within 29th or worse during one stage. But they surprisingly rebounded. I mean, you had Harvick in 11th, Ryan Preece in 13th, Briscoe with 20th, and Almirola 25th. All of them finished on the lead lap. But, I mean, this is a track that changes throughout the day. And even with the weather on top of it, we saw it was mostly overcast through the weekend. And then sun started to pop out during the Coca-Cola 600, which is crazy to believe.
Oh, yeah, this was an old school Coke 600 run during the daytime and ending
at night.
At night rather than starting in the evening
and
ending at 10 o'clock, you know.
Exactly.
What time did you leave the tracks Monday?
I left after the Xfinity race. I left there around midnight. It was about a 15-hour day for me. I got there at like 9 a.m. Saw some of the Xfinity race. They started for 42 laps, and then rain came. They delayed it till after the Cup race, waited for the track to dry, and then, like I said, was there for the finish of the Cup race and the Xfinity race.
So, but and the Coke 600 won by Ryan Blaney. This was his first like drama-free win of his Cup career. What was the stat? Like he'd led 100 more laps like 11 times and never won.
Yeah,
and all of his wins.
He's the anti-William Byron. That's the ironic thing about that, because William Byron leads 100 laps, he's going to win the race. Ryan Blaney leads over 100 laps, he's probably just have something falter short on him. But I mean, it was a good type of win, and he's actually been kind of consistent. And the interesting point too is I asked him post race if this season kind of for his average finish is so far better than his 2021 season, which is arguably his best season in Cup Series. And I asked him, he said, he doesn't feel like really that much difference between now and the 2021 season. So it's tough to gauge with that, but I think it's interesting that Ryan Blaney is on track to have, a career season.
Yep. And that's 8 wins now on his career so far. And through 14 races this year so far, Blaney has 4 top fives and 8 top tens. So now 2 of the 3 Penske teams have won. Austin Cindric's the odd man out.
Mm-hmm.
I actually talked to him earlier today. You'll be able to hear that interview next week on the show. He only has 2 top tens so far this season.
As always, you got to make sure to turn in every week. But Cindric has kind of just been, a head scratcher. And, he crashed out during the race on the back straightaway.
Yeah.
And if I recall, it was just more he got loose off of turn 2 and wrecked it. So there's a lot of head scratching going on with Cindric's team. He won the Daytona 500 last year. I don't think he's won since then.
Nope.
So I think the pressure does feel a little bit on for Cindric, but like I said, Penske is back in Liberty Lane, and they swept the weekend with Indy 500 and the Coca-Cola 600.
So let's do a rundown of the top 10.
Yes,
the Coke 600.
Let's do it.
Ryan Blaney finished first. Then who came behind him?
When we had Ryan Blaney at first, we had William Byron finished in second, Martin Truex Jr. in third, Bubba Wallace in fourth, Tyler Reddick in fifth. Note with that, two 23-11 cars in the top five, first time in team history. Kyle Busch finished sixth, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. finished seventh, Chris Buescher was eighth, Austin Dillon was ninth, and career best for Zane Smith in 10th position for Front Row Motorsports.
So Bubba Wallace, probably he probably had a car that could have potentially contended, but his pit crew did not help him out in this race. And on the final stint, he restarted 14th. And I look up with like 10 to go, and he's suddenly fifth. Like, where did he come from?
He had an up and down day, yeah. Like pit stops and a lot of stuff shuffled him through that, you know, the 600 miles. You know, he'd be up front, then fall back up front. And then, like you mentioned, he made that late charge. I was pretty impressed. I was like, yeah, I'd be outside the top 10, maybe again a top 10. Oh, he's in the top five. He passed Tyler Reddick. And whatever heard the radio, I think it was Reddick. You know, teams were looking at Reddick as a really good short lap speed run car. And I think that's the interesting thing with Bubba Wallace is he came out of nowhere to get a top five finish.
And apparently he was only on like two lap pressure tires. So
tires make a difference.
But I don't know if all that was tires though, because that was insane. 14th to 4th. That's crazy. So, but no, it was a great race. Charlotte Motor Speedway is now again like a marquee race. I was concerned going into it, like, okay, they had a year. There were so many questions, you know, around the next gen car last year. So maybe that influenced the quality of the race we got there last year. But no, we got another stellar race. It was really, really good. And should we ditch the Roval after this year?
Remember what I told you a few weeks ago. Toval, Texas Motor Speedway Oval. Let's make that happen. We'll put Charlotte back on the Oval. Let's turn Texas into the Toval. Please. Please, I am begging you. I mean, that... Sell me that. That's how Charlotte Motor Speedway sold themselves as the Roval. Sell yourselves as the Toval. I'm looking at you, Eddie Gossage.
He's no longer...
I'm still looking at him. He knows people.
Anyway, all right. Let's move on to our interview segment of this week's episode. So this weekend, NASCAR is going to Worldwide Technology Raceway, which is, you know, a 1.25-mile oval in Madison, Illinois. It's just a few miles from St. Louis and the Mississippi River. While the Cup Series went there for the first time last year, NASCAR has been competing there since the track opened back in 1998, first with the Xfinity Series and with the Truck Series. The track closed down after 2010,
yep.
And it was Curtis Francois, who is a real estate developer in the St. Louis area. He's a St. Louis native. He bought the track, and it reopened in 2014, and Trucks and Xfinity, or Trucks at least, went back there.
Yeah, Xfinity, he's not been back there yet. I've attended several races down there at Gateway, so it's had a meaning, you know, in my heart. And that's actually the first race I covered for FrontStretch.com was the truck race in 2021.
Okay. But no, with Worldwide Technology Raceway on the schedule for this weekend, I set up an interview with the track's owner, Curtis Francois. And so I talked to him for 15 minutes, talked about why he bought the track a decade ago, the improvements they've made to the track in the last year or so to get it to be a cup-worthy facility. And currently the track's in the midst of like $100 million plan that they hope to have, renovation plan that they hope to have completed by 2025. So I talked to them about that. And they talked just also about the improvements they've made since last year. Because I went as a fan, and there were some improvements that could have been made, and they actually have done some. So anyway, here is my interview with Curtis Francois, the owner of Worldwide Technology Raceway. So yep. I guess, so a week and a half out, like what all are you guys doing? Like what is it, 7, 8, 10, 11 days until the weekend starts? What are you guys doing at this point?
Well, I think, you know, most of the major work is all complete, but now it's the setup and making sure that all of the interactive pieces, any of the places that fans will be coming, seeing, interacting with, that all is being put together as we speak. So there's an awful lot of that for infrastructure wise. From it starts really with, you know, the entry gates and parking and pedestrian trams and bridges that get you into the racetrack, and, you know, all of those things, to setting up concessions and making sure that all of our fan zone furniture and all of that is in mm-hmm. place. It's top to bottom. Plus, obviously, getting the racetrack ready to go and making sure mm-hmm. it's ready for race cars.
So I guess first off, to tell the people who, you know, listening to this podcast, you know, or watching it, like, tell them a little bit about yourself. How did you... You're a lifelong St. Louis native, correct?
Yes, I'm born and raised in St. Louis. Always had a passion for things with motors, steering wheels, and gas pedals from as long as I can remember. So I actually was raced as a professionally through my 20s and 30s. And so really had a lot of exposure around the country to racing and to race tracks and how race tracks presented themselves. And so I had that experience from behind the wheel. That is much different, as I found out, from actually operating one of these monstrosities. So we started here at about 150 acres. Now we're over 700 acres as we continue to grow and build things out. But it really has been a heck of a journey to see how our community's coming together and to really make something special for everyone that shows up.
So what did you race? What cars did you race?
Yeah, I raced primarily sports cars. So, you know, I started in the SCCA, which is kind of where you would start your career as a amateur racing. And then from there, I raced all types of open wheel, as well as street-based different cars, but primarily open wheel road course racing.
Okay. So I know you're in the real estate business. So take me back to like 2011, 2012. What made you want to take the dive into, you know, buying the track formerly known as Gateway? Like, what drove you to do that crazy thing?
Well, you know, it was one of those where I felt like I was the guy. I was the guy at the right place at the right time with the right background that could take on a project like this. Honestly, when I found out that it was the track it was being sold, and I just simply called and said, hey, track is only 13 years old. Mm-hmm. And let's make sure that it winds up in someone's hands that are going to take it and move it forward from where it was. I said, if you don't find anybody, call me. And lo and behold, about 6 months later, my phone rang with that call. And, you know, my first inclination is, life is pretty good as it was. I didn't know that I needed to take on another task like this. But honestly, as I look back, it was one of the greatest things that's ever happened in my life. It was to have an opportunity to make a difference in our community.
You know, it would be basically, you know, a decade until the NASCAR Cup Series came calling. So what was the process of securing? I think it's a 5-year agreement. Am I wrong or correct on that?
Yeah. So the process has been, you know, it's a long one. And it honestly started really back in 2014, as I received a phone call from NASCAR about hosting a NASCAR Camping World Truck Series mm-hmm. race. And that was our entree into NASCAR. And through the years, we've built a great camaraderie, a great business relationship, and in many cases, great friendship, as we were putting races on here. And doing so, I think, in a fashion that caught the attention of NASCAR. We just continue to build those relationships. And I think ultimately they felt comfortable with offering us a cup date. And so it was very much an organic process. And I don't really know that I ever asked for a cup date, but I think it was something that no doubt they recognized that we would love a cup date here. But we had to earn it. And I think we continue to demonstrate that we take this job very seriously.
Well, what are some things you had to, I guess, add infrastructure wise to make it, you know, compatible for a cup race, a cup weekend? Because that's a lot different than just, you know, a truck weekend.
Yeah, I think, You know, it's again starts with the blocking and tackling of doing big events and then supersizing that for a cup race. And so, you know, it's the basics. You got to be able to get people into the facility and out of the facility. You've got to get them to where they're having a good opportunity from a concession stand. And those are the blocking and tackling pieces that you have to get right. But the most important part is that you're developing a product and offering that really shows that we understand what needs to happen to entertain guests. And when you're entertaining guests, it's creating an energetic atmosphere, someplace where that people can understand that we're trying to make their experience as best we possibly can.
So what are some lessons that you learned from the first go around last year? Like, what have you guys like done to make sure things go even more smoothly this year compared to last year?
Well, what we did is right after the event, we do a customer service survey, and we wanted honest, unvarnished truth on what their experience was like on race day. And we went right at that and addressed every single one of those points. And so always people are interested in, you know, how do I get into the racetrack? How do I get out of the racetrack? You know, is it a pleasant experience once I'm in the racetrack? And anything that we felt like that we could do to improve that was something that we leaned into. So as people come back this year, they're going to recognize that we've enhanced kind of the flow into the racetrack to make that easier for people to get into the racetrack. We've more than doubled our concession availability, which is a huge number because we had a lot already. And then clearly, we've just leaned into additional experiences. So this year, for the first time anywhere in kind of the Midwest, there we have the Gateway Garage experience. The Gateway Garage experience is going to allow people that are purchasing an infield upgrade will be able to get into the garage, literally into the NASCAR garage, okay, and to take those pictures and interact with all that's going on in the Cup garage. So that is about as up close and personal as you can get to what's happening at the race. And then outside of that, we certainly have all kinds of fan zone areas and entertainment. So there's the kids zone. There's the infield experience that it features all of the NASCAR 75th anniversary assets. So there's simulators there. There's Pinewood Derbies for kids. There's remote control cars for kids. There are driver visits specifically designed for the kids. So no doubt about it, we are extremely family friendly. And we want to make sure that when people come out, they're recognizing every year we're doing something different.
I'm glad to hear about the concessions, because I went last year as a fan. And I remember, you know, towards the end of stage two, I went down to the concourse to see about getting something to eat. And every single thing you could line up for had extremely long lines.
Yes.
If I'd gotten in line and, you know, stayed there through to the end, I think I might have missed the end of the race. So I'm glad you guys have added more options.
Yeah, we did. It was, we have a concessionaire that is a company that does all of that. And, you know, it's hard to explain, hey, this many people are coming and they're going to come in a cadence that is usually at the stage breaks and all of those types of things. So they are ready and willing and able this time. And like I said, over double the amount of concession offerings this time. We've also added a lot more camping again, and it's up close parking and camping. So that'll be nice for the campers that want to be closer to the facility and immediately adjacent to that. So that'll be neat. And then I think as we, you know, again, really debut this the Gateway Garage experience, that's going to be something that is going to be memorable. I don't think most people will have ever had a chance to get this up close and personal to the cars.
Okay. I know you guys you've already invested like $50 million into the track, and your goal is to invest, you know, up to 100 by 2025. So if that like last $50 million, like what are you hoping to like add to the track in the next few years?
Well, using that math, we actually are on the other side of 50 million now, as we just did everything to get ready this year. But really the big upgrade that we're going to see for 2025 is we're going to add just some new conceptual ideas to racetracks. There'll be a large public gathering area that will have multiple different food options, video screens, and a lot of seating where people really can just hang out. And they could actually be in this area as a part of the race and then go to their seats in the grandstands and range back to the area that is just meant to be really an area to relax and hang out. So that'll be neat. A lot of new suites that'll be coming along, and then some new other offerings to where you'll have a suite and a kind of a promenade deck that you'll be able to watch the race from. So much that's coming here as we look to the future.
Okay. So I got the press release yesterday that you guys are having a fashion show in partnership with Neiman Marcus. That was a bit out there. I wasn't expecting that. So what was the genesis of that idea?
Well, that comes from a group of us that are just trying to think outside of the box. And there's a family, the Scotts, as well as Raja Carruth, that are both fashion forward, let's just say that. And then some conversations with those from Neiman Marcus, it seemed like a natural fit. So that came together well. That's going to be a fun thing for the group that is a part of that.
That's not something that you would typically associate with, I guess, NASCAR's general audience. I'm curious from a marketing standpoint, how many different plans do you have for different subsections of, I guess, the St. Louis area, different cultures and stuff like that? How do you plan out your marketing for different groups to get them to come to the track?
That's a great question. I think, you know, just the way we look at that is NASCAR has something for everyone, and it's not immediately obvious. NASCAR certainly has a broad demographic, and we're trying to, again, expand on that demographic. So we're going to have some Cadillacs here showing on our midway. And that's a little bit outside the norm of what you would see at a NASCAR race. We have a car show that happens on Saturday. We have the JJK Jackie Joyner Kersey 5K race on Saturday. So a lot of these things is where we're just really trying to plan an event that touches all different demographics, all different socioeconomic status. Everyone is welcome and will feel welcome when they come to our racetrack. And that's by design. We want to make sure that everyone understands this is a community asset. And so we're looking to reach out to everyone that we can.
How big is your marketing footprint? Like, how far away from St. Louis are you, like, advertising the event?
Yeah, so about 300 miles. If you kind of went from the center of where we're at, we go out about 300 miles in each direction. Okay. Sometimes there's overlap with other markets, and we really, if there's another event there, we won't market into that. But we find that we have people from all over the Midwest, and even from the South and Southeast that are coming to our races, because we have a great radio station here in St. Louis that is called KMOX, who's been broadcasting Cardinals games for over 50 some odd years to all over the Midwest and the country. And so there's a great following from around the St. Louis area for other different cities. And we want to make sure that we reach out to all of those areas.
Okay. So is there anything else you want to mention about the race weekend next weekend?
Yeah, I think just one other thing is certainly please come early if you're going to be here, because we have such a big day planned on Sunday. And so our gates open first thing in the morning at 8 o'clock. I think we start on the midway with different activities happening. Confluence Music Festival starts where the artists will start playing at the different stages around that time. But there is just so much going on with all of the Confluence Music artists, and they'll be on the main stage starting early in the morning. But I think it's also important that the know before you go of, hey, you know, you can bring in your own water bottles. We'll have water filling stations around so that if you need to have that. Soft-sided coolers are available. You can bring in your soft drinks and your snacks and those types of things so that you have those available. This year, different than last year, parking is included in your ticket price. And so there will be no need to stop and scan a parking ticket. So that just really is designed to ease the flow in and out of the area. Make sure you stop by the Gateway Garage Experience. That's going to be fantastic. And remember, these concerts are just going to be really neat with all the concerts culminating with Dierks Bentley after the race, which is kind of not normal. after the race, we have this major concert that is a part of the ticket. When you buy your NASCAR ticket, you're in for Dierks Bentley.
Dierks Bentley's been very busy with NASCAR this year. He was at the 500 and he just did North Wilkesboro. So now he's coming to St. Louis. So he's been very busy.
Yeah, he's great. He's a great friend to NASCAR. We love working with him. And I think he's just going to deliver a fantastic show. It's the only time that he will be in the St. Louis area in 2023.
All right, cool. And are you anticipating another sellout?
Let's just say we're tracking right along with where we were last year. And I can get to, closer to the race, I'll be able to tell you for sure. But no, we're doing good on ticket sales. It's time to buy the tickets, though, right now, if you want to come.
All right, that's good to hear. Well, thank you, Mr. Francois. I appreciate it. Thank you for joining me today on Dropping the Hammer, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. So I appreciate it.
All right, great. Great to be with you, Daniel. Thanks.
All right, Jared, it's time to preview the Enjoy Illinois 300 presented by Ticket Smarter. That's this weekend's race at Worldwide Technology Raceway. Starts at 2:30 p.m. Central Time. It'll be on Fox Sports 1, according to Adam Stern at Sports Business Journal. The track is trending towards being a sellout once again, just like last year. And that 240 lap race, 300 miles. And last year it was won by Joey Logano in an overtime finish over Kyle Busch, who led a race high 66 laps. This wasn't an eventful race. If you remember, this is where the whole Denny Hamlin and Ross Chastain saga started. I watched from the stands and it was entertaining. The last few laps where Logano was trying to reel in Kyle Busch were riveting. He ultimately had to do it in overtime after, I think it was a Kevin Harvick crash? I don't know.
Yeah, it was Harvick. He crashed into turn three. I mean, it was a pretty interesting race, and I thought, Logano was the fastest car that weekend, too. He qualified seventh, but he was able to steal the deal. And I think, again, you're going to look at those Joe Gibbs Racing drivers, and I would look at a type of Logano at this type of track where it's different between turn one and two compared to turn three and four. So this is, this is not somewhere you're going to have like a surprise winner. I think this is going to be, again, you're going to have somebody that's been established, that's already won, and they're going to go to victory lane.
And William Byron won Phoenix, correct?
William Byron did win in Phoenix, correct.
I think... This will be a little bit similar to that track. So I think William Byron may have it in the bag this weekend.
Let me remind you, he finished 19th last year. Hendrick Motorsports was not in the top 10.
Yikes.
The best Chevrolet driver was Eric Jones when he was with Petty GMS.
Yeah, he did have a good race that day.
He did have a good race. But I'm sticking with the Toyota camp, and I'm actually going to be looking at Martin Truex Jr. I think that's going to be my pick to win this weekend. I still like the Toyotas as well. Logano and Kyle Busch would still be good picks, but I'm looking at Martin Truex. I think he could perform well at this type of track and secure his second win of the season.
So what did you think of how the track performed last year with these next-gen cars? What did you think about it?
I think it's coming back to the roots of this is definitely a unique track, and this is somewhere it gets a little bit more in the driver's hand because you got turn one and two a little bit more sweeping compared to like turn three and four. So I think it
kind of like Darlington, but without banking.
So I think it can play generally well with these drivers. Again, you saw the cream of the crop rise in the situation. I would argue Kyle Busch, one of the best drivers, the pedigree drivers as well. Larson's, pretty good at that. You could put him in the conversation, and Logano as well, too. But it's a type of track where, again, you don't have a lot of banking to lean on. So if you're going to make speed, it's going to be you, bud.
All right. Well, I do like I know we talked about this, I think, on our pilot episode about, this track has been around for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And it didn't get a shot at the Cup till just last year, and that's I kind of like that tracks from that were built in the boom era that didn't get shots at Cup back then, like Nashville Super Speedway, it also finally got a shot at.
Remember when Kentucky Motor Speedway got a shot at Cup racing?
Well, yeah, well they missed up on the traffic coordination
Driver coordination, I think they were a little bit too early. Now they're basically, what, still a lot for Ford trucks that are still looking for their microchips. So, I mean, it's a good story with Gateway because, again, I was there beforehand, and it was a nice little track situated in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely unique. The credential office, like I said, was across the street. And when you drive out of the track, I did this, you know, 2021, you have to drive straight out through the track. The tunnel's a little complicated to get in there. So when I was inside there, you drive straight across the racetrack to get out. So I like that unique track. I'm glad it's on the schedule. It's like I said, there's a piece of my heart in there. I've attended several races. I was even there with the Brad Keselowski-Carl Edwards incident in 2010. Ooh. Yes. So I've seen quite a bit of history there. So I'm glad that Gateway and St. Louis are going to add another chapter to this as well.
And I'll be there to document it.
Yes.
Jared, as I mentioned on last week's episode, I'm covering the race Sunday for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. It's the first NASCAR weekend that the Gazette has covered since about 2009. Mm-hmm. So kind of a big deal. I'm happy they're paying me to go cover this race for them. So it'll be fun. Like I said, I went there as a fan last year, so now I get to see the infield.
Yes. Pretty interesting track, I'll say much, too. I've been there before, too. So I'm excited for you, and like I said, we've been traveling back and forth in race weekends.
Yeah.
You were at the All-Star race. I was at Charlotte, and now you're at Gateway.
So, yeah. But I'm looking forward to it. You can follow me at Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Dana McFadden. For updates throughout the weekend, and I'll have a sidebar story. Gosh, Jared, I'm doing terrible today. I'll have a sidebar story in Monday's paper of the Gazette and online. So,
and you can follow me at the Twitter at Jared Haas. It's on the Twitter too, but I had to make reference to that. So, but I will not be there this weekend. I will actually be going to a wedding, so I will be out of town. So, shucky darn, I know. You have to follow Daniel for weekend update stuff from his feed.
Oh, well. Oh, well. I'll manage. So, but anyway, no, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, next week, we'll have an interview with Austin Cindric. I'm scheduled to interview Ricky Stenhouse Jr., the defending Daytona 500, and he's from Olive Branch, Mississippi. He's the closest thing Arkansas has to a local Cup driver. So, I'll be talking to him Saturday. So I look forward to bringing that to you at some point down the line. So we got some good stuff cooking right now here at Dropping the Hammer.
Oh, we're cooking, all right. I mean, we're frying eggs and we're dropping hammers.
Anyway, all right. But thank you guys for listening and watching to this episode. We'll be back here next week to talk about Gateway and the track formerly known as Gateway. I'm sorry.
It's Gateway. It's Worldwide Technology Park, but that's a mouthful.
It's the Gateway in our hearts. That's the title of this week's episode. It's Gateway in Our Hearts.
All right, folks. We'll see you at the next podcast. Take care.
Thank you. I'm Daniel McFadden. This has been Jared. Have a great day. Enjoy the races. Talk to you next week.